Hello and welcome to the Journalism.co.uk podcast, a show where we bring you insights from media industry experts to help journalists do their jobs better. I'm your host, Jacob Granger. This week, we're going to talk about leadership skills fit for a new era of thriving news organisations. Newsrooms come in all shapes and sizes, and they face different challenges that require tailored managerial strategies. But they also have many common conundrums, like getting to grips with generative AI and developing new revenue streams. For the past 4 years, the Craig Newmark Graduate School of Journalism at CUNY, the City University of New York, has run journalism leadership programs for newsroom leaders from all walks of life. The Senior Director of Leadership Programs, Nikita Patel, joins us this week to reflect on what makes today's successful newsroom leader. We'll also discuss the difference between newsroom leaders at larger legacy media brands and the smaller local and independent companies. So, whatever the size of your newsroom, stay tuned for tips on how to lead with empathy, motivate your team, and create a culture geared for experimentation. Nikita, welcome to the journalism.co.uk podcast. A pleasure to have you on the show. Thanks for coming on.
Thanks for having me.
We're going to talk a lot today about the different leadership challenges that are facing larger legacy media as well as smaller media and media startups. But when we think about traditional newsroom leadership, what does that historically look like? What form has that historically taken?
Sure, that's a great question. I think in the past, sort of news leaders really, I think they really did try to move the industry forward. But I think the rapid pace of technology, economic headwinds, just different formats and things were just too much to keep up with. And so now I think what we're seeing is leaders who are more like futurists, who are thinking about innovation, who are thinking about diversity, equity and inclusion, and empathy in sort of new and different ways, and prioritizing things a little bit differently, which I'm glad about. And so I hope that, like, as we emerge from this sort of like platform era and we're trying to embrace this new AI era that we're in, I hope that news leaders can sort of learn from mistakes of the past to help the industry move forward.
When we think about newsroom leaders, who have they historically been in newsrooms? Because a lot of these skills that you talked about there maybe feel quite distant from a journalistic one. So when we consider who newsroom leaders are, who have they historically been?
Sure, yeah. Newsroom leaders in the past have historically been, you know, a mix of obviously sort of journalists that have been reporters in the field that have obviously, you know, then become editors and then editors in chief and whatnot. And then you have a mix of folks across the business side as well. And in the past, sort of like those were seen as two different lanes and very different disciplines. And I think now we're seeing a commingling of those sort of disciplines and knowledge bases. And that also gives me hope about the future of the industry, because you've now got media leaders that actually do care, you know, news leaders specifically, that do care about the business of journalism and sustainability. And then you have folks on the business side that deeply care about editorial content and reaching their audiences too. In the past, we didn't typically see that historically.
Now, that's interesting, because I feel like good journalists don't always make good leaders. You need a very specific skill set to be a good manager and a good leader. And so what has brought up the discussion, which is we need journalists to be more like dedicated leaders, as opposed to what we've historically done, which is just this kind of ad hoc ascension from journalist to editor to newsroom leader?
So I think today we're seeing sort of like a new style of leadership that's being cultivated in newsrooms, because we need leaders running newsrooms who are charismatic, who can really be dynamic in terms of understanding the sort of like technological playing fields and where their newsrooms can have a competitive edge. I think we're also seeing news leaders coming to the table with a dose of realism, which to me is much needed, where newsrooms understand that, you know, it's okay to sunset specific products. It's okay to evolve and change mediums and experiment, because they have to reach the communities they serve, right? And so many, many different types of newsrooms of all shapes and sizes were too broad and, you know, tried to cover everything and be everything to everyone. And I'm glad that we now have leaders that are seeing that they need to go back to the drawing board and really think about their organization's mission, vision, values, you know, the audiences that they want to serve. They're really thinking smartly about connecting with those communities, because that's the only way they're going to be able to rebuild trust and get those audiences' loyalty as well.
Right. Now, that's really interesting, because what I was going to ask was, do you think that part of the answer is to do with the fact that media businesses are just becoming more complicated? But within your answer there, it's also, well, we also need to simplify, and we also need to find what is driving our businesses fundamentally. So is that a key shift in mindset right now?
Absolutely. Yeah. This is why you're seeing newsrooms like, let's say, the 19th, you know, the Texas Tribune, Capital B, just to name a few, where they really have clearly defined strategic plans, goals, audience segments in mind. And these newsrooms are doing an excellent job in really trying to get to know their audience in thoughtful ways, whether that's through events, whether that's through custom newsletters, whether that's, you know, being in on different platforms and things like that. And then if there are projects and initiatives that don't help meet those goals, then they won't do them. And I think that's really admirable. And I think it's really smart too, right?
CUNY's flagship course is the Executive Programme in News Leadership and Innovation, now 4 years old. It's a hybrid online and in-person course, complete with an academic year-long curriculum and a project to implement in a newsroom. Applications are currently open until the 3rd of May. Students walk away with a firmer grasp of how editorial, business, technology and product are all interlinked. But Nikita says that the focus on business and finance has proved the most transformational aspect of the course. It reflects a state of the industry where there is big pressure on newsroom leaders to get results and achieve sustainability. For this reason, developing peer networks, confidence and problem-solving frameworks are also very valuable.
A lot of leaders in the program come from many disciplines in newsrooms. Sometimes they are that sort of like traditional reporter turned editor. Other times we see heads of audience, you know, heads of product, even folks on the business development side in the program as well. And these business and finance classes make the biggest impact, because we actually simplify finance concepts to make them more digestible and relatable and contextualize them in terms of what it means to run a newsroom and make decisions on budget allocation, for instance, understanding how to read, you know, balance sheets and things like that. And then with our business of journalism classes, we really look at a myriad of different models, you know, kind of what nonprofit newsrooms are doing, you know, where reader revenue can be sort of like gleaned from. And we really encourage creativity and a lot of thought around blended hybrid sort of business models that we're now seeing in the industry. And so coupled with these classes and then our leadership workshops, so I host some of those, and sometimes Anita Zielina does, and some of them are about, you know, stakeholder management and delegation, you know, building resilience, for instance. Most recently, I taught one on imposter syndrome, you know, and how you can try to overcome that when you're experiencing it. The first step is to acknowledge that you're experiencing it and then explore ways to build your own self-confidence. And so in that workshop, we talk about imposter syndrome as a leader, but then also if you can see that in your colleagues and your teams and how you can help them and lift them up as well. And so people feel like they've been given real frameworks and tools and tangible sort of ideas that they can put into practice right away. Just that alone raises their confidence, raises their knowledge. It really makes them feel like, even though the program's an academic year long, it feels like they've just been completely transformed and can tackle problems with new insights and have fresh thinking with regards to big, complicated projects. You know, we're really able to help them distill things down and come up with smart ideas and approaches.
Stuff like imposter syndrome, has that always been there, or has that evolved throughout the program over the years?
So I actually introduced that leadership workshop for imposter syndrome last year, and this year was the second year that I taught that. And so that's just a prime example of how, you know, we try and keep the curriculum and the classes, you know, up to date and very current.
Awesome. Is there anything else that you've that has emerged onto this program in recent times, or is imposter syndrome the main one?
Yeah, no. So we actually introduced AI classes formally this year into the curriculum as well. And so given the explosion of ChatGPT and generative AI sort of in the public sphere last year, as you might imagine, AI would come up in class just naturally, right? Through conversations and things like that. And so there were a set of three classes where we first focused on sort of like different use cases and tools. And we sort of did a workshop where we experimented with some of the various tools out there.
Yep.
Then the last two classes were about sort of governance and obviously ethical AI, you know, policies and things like that as well. So so we just actually wrapped up those classes and they were really well received.
Just a quick one from me and then we'll get back to the show. Join us on the 22nd of May at our next digital journalism conference, News Rewired, in London. If you're enjoying this episode, and I hope you are, you will love the session which explores well-being interventions in the newsroom, and there's plenty more on newsletters, young audiences, fact-checking, and much more. I'll be there, and I'd love to see you there too. Head over to newswire.com for the full agenda and to grab your place today. You've worked as a journalist, and you've also worked for platforms. I do wonder what element of this really seems to you quite radical from a newsroom perspective, like something that you wouldn't historically think a journalist would need to worry about, that element of leadership, but in fact it's really important now.
So I think given that I've worked, as you said, I've worked in newsrooms, I've worked on the platform side, and now I'm in journalism education, what I've been able to see in all those experiences is that we need news leaders who not only focus on serving their audiences, which are their communities, we also need news leaders to serve their own communities, which are their newsrooms, right? And when I teach this within our program, when news leaders realize that their own newsroom is a community that they need to serve, it's kind of like a light bulb goes off. And that's actually a game changer in terms of how they view, treat, and respect their employees. And when employees feel seen, heard, and respected, particularly journalists, then the quality of the journalism that you're producing ultimately becomes higher as well.
Yeah, I think it is a light bulb moment to think of it in that way. And that's quite a refreshing thought. Practically, how do you get there in terms of thinking of your newsroom as a community?
Absolutely. So within our diversity, equity and inclusion classes, we spend a lot of time talking about psychological safety. We spend a lot of time talking about leading with empathy. I also teach another leadership workshop, leading with positivity, right? Like leaders do have to be very positive and have to really be thinking about ways they can boost morale and confidence in others through shaky times, right? Like there are layoffs are at an all-time high within our industry. Obviously, ad revenue is down, although it's nice that we're seeing some bright spots from The Atlantic and some other newsrooms out there. I'm so glad for that. But, you know, I think leading with empathy is really something that we sort of supercharge also throughout the program, and making sure that, you know, I think in the past, news leaders sort of weren't treating their teams like people. And I think that we're changing a lot. I think we have as a society, thanks to the pandemic and things like that. But when you realize that your newsroom is full of people that actually represent your community, or your newsroom should be, that is also another light bulb moment as well.
That interpersonal skill set, that humanization, I think that's applicable to leaders in whatever size newsroom they're in right now, whether they're really small, whether they're much larger, whether they're in the middle. So I think that's a great thing to pull out. But you know, one thing we will come onto is the immersion program, of course, which is more geared towards startups and smaller local media and independents. But a word on the larger legacy publications before we move on to that. What are the unique leadership challenges facing them? What are they going through, and what is going to see the leaders through to success there?
So I think with sort of like bigger, larger newsrooms, you know, leaders are faced with massive problems sort of at scale, if you will, because they have larger operations, right? So larger teams, larger sets of people to oversee and manage, products that may ultimately serve larger audiences as well. And that's sort of where things can get a bit tricky in terms of that, the approach of like, we're trying to serve everyone. Nobody can effectively do that the right way, sadly, when it comes to news organization and the different products that you might have. And so with this new emerging program that we have, you know, that program is specifically dedicated to leaders from local and rural newsrooms, because they have to be much more nimble in terms of staffing and resources. You know, sometimes an editor in a local newsroom might wear many hats. Maybe they're also in charge of their social feeds, as well as having to edit stories and sort of be that charismatic, you know, leader that can energize the newsroom as well. And so, you know, we have thoughtfully designed a curriculum with that nimble leader in mind from local and rural newsrooms who is sort of doing a balancing act, if you will.
Yeah.
So I think at the larger level with legacy and bigger newsrooms, you know, it's sort of like the challenges that between them and then sort of like the local and rural newsrooms, it's the same challenges, but I think it's like the scales are different though, if that makes sense. And for local and rural news leaders, you know, they often don't have budgets to be able to travel and be able to go to conferences and events and network and things like that.
I think there's a lot in that, Nikita, which is really interesting. I feel like the difference there in what you've described is the larger legacy media organizations maybe have more clearly defined roles within their teams and other teams that they're going to be responsible for. Whereas in the smaller operations, you can have sort of several job titles and you're in charge of a multitude of different things. And sticking with the larger legacy media, if we can just for a moment more, what is it like to be in that position where you are responsible for such a large scale operation? And what does that mean for the leadership skill set necessary to do that job?
In larger newsrooms, leaders are constantly juggling sort of like many strategic sort of avenues. So they're obviously, you know, focused on the business and very results oriented. And then they're also making sure that they have the right resources and the right sort of like teams in place and that the ship is sort of like going hopefully in one direction, right? And so it's almost like being this sort of like navigator in a way from a very high perch, if you will. Whereas in local newsrooms, you know, we see leaders that sort of have two avenues and wear many hats where they have to be very strategic and be that navigator, but then they're also in the weeds, right? They're also very much hands-on in the CMS. Like, I can speak to that very much from my own experience, having started in local newsrooms, you know, and then moved on to bigger newsrooms before my time, you know, on the platform side. And so it's fascinating to look at the different sets of challenges and leadership skills that the sort of bigger newsrooms leaders have need to have for bigger newsrooms versus local and rural newsrooms as well.
It's quite telling that newsroom leaders are looking for tips and strategies to deal with imposter syndrome. That in these times of pressure and disruption, self-doubt creeps in and leaders can feel out of their depth. On the other hand, empathetic leaders are paving the way for conversations about mental health to be more open and acceptable. This is not something exclusive to those managing larger legacy publications either. Smaller publications are feeling this burden too. CUNY has just launched its Emerging News Leadership Programme for 25 news leaders working in local and rural news organisations from the US and abroad. Consider it a bite-sized version of the executive programme with shorter time spans, being fully online, but similar in its curriculum, coaching sessions and final project delivery. It provides the time and space for those burning projects that leaders in smaller organisations can never make time for or just keep putting off.
In those local and rural newsrooms, when you're wearing many hats, you know, I'd like to think that it's probably a little bit more stressful because you're thinking you're having to focus on many different strategies and tactics, right? From the business side to editorial and product side as well. So
yeah, I mean, you said about the larger newsrooms being very results orientated and outcome sort of driven there, but local media as well is really in a pinch as well, and I'm sure they're feeling the strain to make their operations work, to really find the dollars coming through and to keep their newsrooms open as well. So it doesn't surprise me too much that there's a lot of interest around that particular stress in the business.
Absolutely, yeah. And I think, you know, larger newsrooms have been sort of more innovative in terms of sort of understanding their data, right? Having data tools, first of all, and then being able to understand that the data to make informed decisions. Whereas local and rural newsrooms, sometimes they have very limited tools and limited access to data. And, you know, within this program, we're also trying to change that as well. We have growth and metrics classes, you know, to put an emphasis on that.
Yeah.
Because that will then ultimately help these leaders make smarter decisions, again, when it comes to the dollars when it comes to, you know, the eyeballs and all of those levers that they need to pull as well.
I get that there's this big resourcing sort of area of need amongst local and smaller publishers right now, but is there anything else that you're really hoping to address through this program, which is a really growing or prominent area of need amongst these smaller newsrooms?
Absolutely. I think, you know, a sense of camaraderie as well. As I mentioned before, like, leadership can be very, very lonely, and it can be even more so in local newsrooms and rural newsrooms, right? Where you have very small teams and sometimes you're in the thick of things and, you know, everything is an emergency, everything is a fire, and you feel so lonely. And this program will serve to bring this cohort together so they have a sense of community amongst themselves, you know, for them to explore different solutions and be introduced to new tools maybe and tactics to help them hopefully overcome that as well.
Yeah. A lot of my questions have been focused on the challenges, but maybe there are opportunities here really to consider. On our podcast before last, we spoke about generative AI, which we've touched on today, and how maybe smaller news organizations are at an advantage there because they are more nimble, they're more able to make snappier decisions, they're not so confined by silos and sort of long-winded decision-making processes. You know, is that something you've considered? And are there other maybe advantages for smaller publications when it comes to the leadership conversation?
That's what attracted me to local news in the beginning of my career as well, knowing that local newsrooms have a little bit more freedom, have a little bit more sort of a creative runway. And quite frankly, sometimes when there's less chefs in the kitchen, it is freeing and it is really great to be able to sort of experiment and try things. And if they work, that's amazing. If not, at least you've tried things, right? And then to be able to do retros as well. I think I'm a big fan of retros within sort of like the product cycle process.
Sorry, what do you mean by retros?
Retros meaning that, you know, you take the time after, let's say you've launched a product, you sort of take the time to assess how things went, what could have been better, what you can learn in terms of being able to iterate and go on.
Right. And I just interjected you in the middle of your thought process there, but why are retros salient? Why are they important?
I think they're incredibly important because oftentimes, especially in the news industry, when newsrooms are launching sort of different products and experiments all the time, they then sometimes abandon them without sort of going back and sort of like documenting things. That's really helpful for future teams and iterations of products. And then it's also helpful because sometimes you're working cross-functionally, right? Sometimes it's newsroom partnering with, let's say, marketing or the business side. You know, you've got engineers and developers in the mix too. And I think it's always really good to work in a cross-functional environment, and particularly when you do a retro, because then you're getting a ton of feedback on how to improve like the process of working together, as well as like how to ultimately, hopefully, iterate on the product as well. So I'm the biggest fan of retros for any kind of project or initiative, even within our programs, by the way. On the CUNY side, we do retros after sort of our residencies, and after each program, we look at like all the feedback that we've gotten. We look at sort of like the results of classes, and we really take stock of sort of like what we think went well and didn't go well, matched with the feedback survey, so that we can calibrate, right, and keep improving things. And so I think retros are one of the most important things that we should absolutely make time for, whether you're a news leader from a large legacy organization or a small newsroom. I think legacies just are so key and important to be able to keep revamping.
Yeah. Let me spend another minute with retros because this sounds really interesting. I wonder, is there a pitfall to using retros that newsroom leaders ought to consider?
Sometimes I have been part of retros where people are very brash and maybe overly honest in their feedback and thoughts. Like, sometimes retros can get a little bit contentious.
Right.
But if you've created a cross-functional team and you've really tried to instill a sense of psychological safety in that team, and you've built trust and there's a level of respect for everyone, then hopefully you've created an environment for healthy dialogue, right? And so that's the only time when I've seen some resistance to retros or where retros have gone awry. But typically the retros tend to go really well because everyone has good intentions, everybody is moving in the same direction, folks understand their goals and the outcomes and ultimately want to improve, let's say, their product experience or, you know, an internal initiative perhaps as well.
But what if you don't have that? What if you don't have that culture? How do you set up a retro to succeed?
So there are actually templates out there that can help you basically design a retro. So you can map out like who needs to be part of the retro, how long it's going to be, what the format is. During my time at Twitter, sometimes we would even do an internal form for a retro so that there were key topics or themes we could actually openly discuss and have a sort of agenda for as well.
Yeah, but the pitfall that you identified was more to do with culture more than anything else. Mm-hmm. So what sort of a culture do you need in your newsroom to make them work? And how do you, as the newsroom leader, what's your role and responsibility in fostering that?
So in order to have a culture in newsrooms where you're doing regular retros, you know, hopefully as a leader has set the foundation for a culture of openness and trust, you know, creating a safe space so that people can share feedback, whether that feedback is, you know, positive, constructive, or even blunt, to be honest, right? And that's, to me, is a sort of healthy dialogue, if you will. And so making sure that, you know, you have an inclusive team, you know, making sure that, you know, diversity, equity, and inclusion is, you know, a priority. You know, oftentimes it's sort of like a nice shiny thing, but really an afterthought, you know. But I think prioritizing DEI, talking about psychological safety, having workshops with regards to empathy, you know, so setting up a culture that is very open and safe, then will make retros even more meaningful.
Okay. I mean, this might be a good place to leave the conversation, because I think ultimately we're not just talking about journalists at this point. We're talking about people. And you've seen people come through your leadership programs from all walks of life, from different cohorts, different size organizations. What kind of a person is a successful newsroom leader today? What sort of qualities and attributes will they need to make their newsroom succeed?
Sure. Today's newsroom leader is somebody that is very modern, somebody that is really charismatic, someone that deeply cares and is invested in their people. And so obviously the numbers are important. Obviously, you know, goals are important. Somebody that's able to balance being very strategic, but also deeply cares about their people when it comes to diversity, equity, inclusion, and someone that also is very empowering, right? Like, I think leaders that are able to sort of like harness power, but also transfer that power and empower their teams and their people to be able to make decisions, to be able to see strategies through, to be able to execute ultimately. That to me is also a game changer in leaders we're seeing today as well.
Awesome. Nikita, thanks ever so much for coming on our show. It's been a blast. Thank you so much.
Of course. Thank you so much for inviting me on. This has been really fun.
My takeaway for today is that newsrooms of all sizes are under pressure to succeed, but they cannot do everything. So they need to pick their battles carefully, which makes it all the more important to have newsroom leaders with very good people skills. Generally speaking, larger media companies have more clearly defined roles, teams, and priorities. This can make processes more complicated, but the individuals have the advantage of being able to delegate these tasks. In smaller media companies, more falls on the shoulders of newsroom leaders who wear many hats. They are more nimble and can make decisions quickly, but their plates overfill very fast. A potential solution to making both of these scenarios easier is by using retros, where we document lessons from projects in a way that is both constructive and, frankly, blunt. Nikita spoke to us about absolutely making space for these, as to remove as many headaches as possible and to ensure those vital lessons learned do not fall through the cracks. Let me know what you took from this one. I'd love to know. Find me on LinkedIn, Twitter/x@jpgjournalism, or email me on jacob@journalism.co.uk. You can check out all of our episodes on all your usual podcast platforms like Spotify and Apple Podcasts. Just search and subscribe to the journalism.co.uk podcast. But that's all we have time for this week. I've been your host, Jacob Granger. Thanks so much for listening. Until next time.